Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, Chad again, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where I help product managers become product masters. Steve Nevedek is a senior manager in innovation for Chick-fil-A. He is responsible for helping to build the innovation muscle within the organization, and his primary duties are geared towards creating a culture of and a competency for innovation at Chick-fil-A. In this interview, we discuss the relationship between improv and innovation, three questions to increase organizational innovation, how Hatch, the Chick-fil-A Innovation Lab, is used, and design thinking influences at Chick-fil-A. Get the show notes and the transcript at theeverydayinnovator.com/070. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. Steve, thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovator.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chad. I really appreciate it.
So as some listeners know, I did this kind of field trip with the family. It was a year-long RV trip from 2013 to 14, driving around the country. And part of that reason for doing that was obviously to build memories for the kids, but I was interviewing innovators along the way and just having a great time doing that. And I got back home and I missed that experience. And that's why this podcast actually started, was so I could continue this interview experience. But I'll tell you, driving through 25 states, we visited every Chick-fil-A that we could. If it was lunchtime or dinner time, that was one of our favorite destinations. So we have very fond experiences of Chick-fil-A. And we eat there probably way too much as it is, but you probably don't mind that.
I don't know that that's possible, Chad. I'm not sure that you can do that.
There was a week that we went every day for that week. So, and it's a weekly destination, at least for us.
That's great.
But let's share a little bit in your role in influencing innovation there at Chick-fil-A. Right. What was your path to doing that? You've been there for a while, and how did you go through the ranks to really be involved in innovation?
Yeah, my tenure here at Chick-fil-A is I'll be celebrating 28 years this year. And so, back in the day, I started off as an associate producer in the training video world, utilizing some of my background in theater and communications. I moved to marketing for about 16 years and wore a variety of different hats there. And then when the innovation function began in 2010, really started to focus on innovation as a discipline for Chick-fil-A. So I moved over and became part of a group that was focusing really on how do you build the innovation muscle at Chick-fil-A. And I've been a part of that, of the innovation dialogue since then, and continue to work on my primary job right now is how do you coach, train, and socialize innovation in the organization so that we stimulate progress, as well as preserve the core of the business, which we do so well.
I'm curious about the theater part, only because not always the case, and it certainly isn't my case, but my background's engineering. But I do find people responsible for innovation roles sometimes have this artistic flavor of their history, right? So what was your experience with theater?
Yep. Well, I have my master's in theater from Wake Forest. And I always wanted to use my creativity either in an advertising agency standpoint or somehow in the arts world. And when I joined Chick-fil-A, I was like, now how am I going to make this work? But have parlayed that actually into a very nice career of spreading creativity in every seat that I have been able to be in here at Chick-fil-A, and just asking the questions of what if versus what is. And for me, that's kind of that creativity component in my life. It's just, I've always been that way ever since I was a kid. And it's come out in cartooning that I've done, and theater that I've done, and writing that I've done, and now in innovation. So just a mixed bag of life experiences, but always kind of with a central theme, at least for me, of what if in the world versus what is. So It's been a great deal of fun.
Yeah, and I love you sharing that perspective. It's a great way to think about innovation, about instead of just being content with the way things are, what if they were different?
That's right. That's right.
On my, I guess it's my to-do list this year, I'm hoping I get to it, is would like to join a improv group just for the experience, because I don't have any of that theater experience at all. That's not my temperament. Right. But I've done a fair bit of public speaking, but this year I've done some specific training to help focus that and deal with, you know, just hopefully getting better. And I thought improv would help with that.
Yes.
As well as it helps stimulate the mind to just think differently, right? And I thought, as absolutely. An innovator, what a great thing to pick up.
Well, we actually had an improv class in here last year, mm-hmm. teaching people, you know, in the business world to be able to think quicker on their feet. I mean, right. Nobody thinks faster than an improv artist. And I think that business people need to learn how to be flexible, to be nimble, to say yes and to somebody else's idea,
right.
To not block, just to continue to move an idea forward. And improv is just a great way to get people trained to do that. Now, we didn't call it improv class because people would have thought we had three heads, but we actually call it how to think faster and work more collaboratively.
Yeah.
And it wound up being an improv class, and people showed up, and we blew them away. They loved it. They were wondering when we can do the next class. So, highly recommend it.
I bet if you open that up to people outside, I might take a field trip to Atlanta and join in sometime. That'd be good fun.
We can consider that.
Maybe a special guest.
Right.
You share a characteristic that I found common with a few people that are involved in leading the innovation efforts in large organizations. Again, not always the case, but many of the people I've talked to in this role have this long history with the company, right? And, mm-hmm. and you said you've been there 28 years.
Right.
How do you think that has helped you in your role as someone responsible for innovation and, throughout the organization?
Well, I think longevity in an organization really, it's really all about perspective. I mean, you get to a certain point in your career where, yes, you can contribute to the well-being of the organization by the skills and talents that you bring into the work. Mm-hmm. But what you have that most people don't have at a certain point is perspective. Mm. And you get a chance to remember the stories of the past where people tried things and failed. Mm-hmm. You get a chance to see and remember and have been a part of the successes. You get a chance to experience a lot of the different things that you know you don't think about at the time as being significant, but once you begin to look back, you realize how significant they were. And even being in Truett Cathy's office, who's the founder of Chick-fil-A, mm-hmm. just being in his office for a one-on-one to have a conversation with him is now like gold because he's gone,
right.
And very few of us had a chance to do that, and so. For me, I think that, you know, innovation and taking new ground and going forward is, of course, extremely important. But if you don't understand from where you've come, it you know, you have an opportunity to make some really critical errors,
right,
in the new ground that you seek to take. It always surprises me how people want to think about new things and pursue the new without asking the question, wait a second, have we just ever looked at that before? And the answer 9 times out of 10 is yes. And now maybe it's time to look at it again, and that's fine. Let's go for it. But what did you learn?
Right.
You know, and if you don't have context and history of what did you learn, you're going to make a really crummy innovator.
Yeah, it provides a perspective. And also, yep. I think you would have a firsthand knowledge of actually what the organization is capable about. And have gained influence along the way with people to help make change happen.
That's exactly right. Yep.
An important perspective to have. And I want to get into specifics about the steps that you've taken to really influence innovation there. What are some of those actions that you can share with us?
Well, Chad, one of the first things that we had to do when we began the discipline of innovation at Chick-fil-A was to really find out where the head of the organization was in terms of what were people comfortable with? We just had to ask questions. We had to understand where the organization was. It's one thing to introduce a topic like innovation into the organization, but you have to understand what's your audience feeling at that particular time. So one of the first things that we did was we go back and we asked questions. We sent out a survey and asked three very important questions to the organization. We asked what innovation was to see if there was any kind of common language. We asked, do we have a culture of innovation? And we asked, why or why not? And that really gave us a great scorecard on the topic and where we felt like we needed to spend our resource. And the answers were different answers for the first one of what innovation is. Everybody had a different definition. Hmm. So we had no common definition and therefore no common process for innovation and how we were going to teach this to people. Most people felt like we had an organization that was a continuous improvement organization, not an innovation organization, which is fine. We have been over time just very, very good at executing with excellence, but not necessarily taking new ground. And then, you know, part of the reason that we didn't was people didn't know how. Part of the reason that we didn't was because people didn't have time. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason we didn't was because people were afraid. They were afraid of failure. What would happen if you fail? And so we had to overcome all those in a, you know, in a systemic way. We had to do classes on, create classes on what innovation means, why it's important, what it means. And we still teach those every month. We had to create classes on, so what's the process for innovation? How does Chick-fil-A approach it? So we teach those every month. We had to create an environment where outside voices were talking about things like being okay to embrace risk, trying new things from a variety of different organizations, you know, outside of Chick-fil-A. So we created a very robust, you know, lunch and learn program where we've got outside voices constantly coming in, talking to people. We went to D-School and took a look at D-School and what they're doing and created basically our own version of that here at our environment in Hatch, which is the place where I work on the Chick-fil-A campus. And it's a two-day innovation immersion. So we break people up into teams and have them tackle problems. And we just had to one by one overcome those hurdles in order to slowly create competency and create culture change. So that's at least where we started.
And those are three big important questions, yes. You know, what is innovation? Do we have a culture of innovation? And why or why not? A couple of things I want to ask you about. Let's start with the fear of failure.
Sure.
So addressing that, you know, isn't something you can really teach people, right? We can't have a workshop that says, hey, it's okay to fail and why that is. It's really structural changes where people see that, you know, that there aren't negative consequences to failing.
Yeah.
It's actually positive consequences because it means you learn something, right?
Sure.
So what did you guys do to actually make that happen, to make that culture change?
Well, I mean, that's a continual battle. Based upon people's wiring, we have, again, 1,500 people on staff, and many of them are very, and most of us are very responsibility minded. Most of us are maximizers, you know, and what that tends to do, if you're not careful, is create a perfectionist mindset where it's got to be perfect, and we can't go with just an 80% solution. You know, we have to test it and bake it and bake it and bake it and bake it until, you know, it's perfect. And we need to understand that good today is better than perfect tomorrow.
Right.
And so that's a role modeling thing. That's a storytelling thing. That's a reward and recognition thing. And so we try to, you know, put things into place or put events into place, teaching in place, programs into place that support that idea that it's really okay. Because you can say it all day long, but until you actually begin to recognize it and reward it within the organization, then people start to go, oh wait, you're serious. And yeah, we are serious.
Right. And I think two of those things that are really good tools, you mentioned rewards and storytelling, you know, lifting up the stories of failures that resulted in learning, you know, that kind of influences the culture. And using rewards, and I've seen this done in organizations when I was with once, that, and this was a big failure, right? It wasn't the kind of innovation failure that we want in terms of, you know, learning and failing fast sort of thing. But we all worked really hard and there was a failure. And the manager of that effort was recognized and rewarded in a very tangible way that everyone in the company knew, because it was recognition of the hard work, even though we didn't get the outcome we wanted.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And those are the kind of things that you have to do. And sometimes you can't push those things from the top down. You have to push them departmentally. And you're like water. You're going to where the seams are. You know, you're going to where you can find traction. What we find, at least here in our environment, is there's an awful lot of traction with innovation, design thinking, mindset with a younger group that's come in. 60% of our workforce has been here for 5 years or less. And so some of those old stories about failing, they don't know.
Right.
So we have to, you kind of have to do the campfire thing, mm-hmm. you know, where you sit around and you have to tell those stories. In fact, we've got a lunch and learn coming up later this year about times that we fail. And those are going to be stories that most people don't know.
Right.
But, you know, you have to tell those. And then you have to be the kind of leader that does reward that experimentation. I mean, nobody's going to sink the business on an idea. Nobody wants to sink the business on an idea. But you make failure cheap. Mm-hmm. You make it fast. You make it safe. And people can embrace it. And the organization realizes that you're not really losing that much when you have a failure, right. that it's okay. And you learn a ton.
And that is that design thinking kind of attitude that you said that people are coming in with and that you're teaching. And you mentioned D-School that you went to, which is Stanford's design thinking school right. that provides That's executive right. ed as another training too. And an important practice in design thinking, which goes back to the improv that we were talking about before, is that, you know, yes and kind of response to ideas and doing quick iterations, running experiments, getting feedback from users, and just being very user-centered.
That's exactly right. And sometimes that's hard to do in a restaurant because, you know, you have real customers who are paying real money to get real products. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we've been able to work on here in the last 5 years is to how do we create simulations and prototypes in a protected space, protected environment where we can move things along. And within our campus now, it used to happen in this building here in Hatch, 80,000 square feet of safety net. We outgrew it. And So we actually created another building across the street that has all of our simulations, prototypes in it. And people are trying things. We bring in customers. We fail. We iterate. We try new things. And we can spin pretty quickly in those kind of environments. And when people watch that happen, in essence, go back to theater training. It's, you're rehearsing.
Right.
You know, the audience isn't in there.
You're practicing in a safe space.
Yeah, you're practicing. And you stop and you give notes and you start again.
Right. Let me ask you about Hatch a little bit and dive into what that thing is.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, 2016 is the year of the Corporate Innovation Lab or Incubator. They've really ramped up from last year to this year, and a lot of large companies have adopted this sort of practice. And you created Hatch, I think, what, 2012? Is that right? And just tell us what that thing is.
We opened it on 12/12/12.
Oh, yeah. Good date.
Yes. Well, we decided after many months of just kind of trying to figure out when we do it, we're going to put a stake in the ground. Mm-hmm. And 12/12/12 was either going to be the opening of Hatch or the end of the world, according to the Mayans. So we just drove a stake in the ground. And we had a large opening for it. A lot of different things that we did. Instead of a ribbon cutting, we had an egg dropping. We dropped eggs filled with paint onto the concrete to symbolize messiness, to symbolize this was a different way of working. It was a different environment. Hmm. At 12/12 in the afternoon on 12/12/12, we threw eggs again filled with paint against canvases to create a large canvas to again symbolize the creativity and collaboration that innovation requires. It's a different mindset. It's a different world. It's an unclean world. It's a messy world. It's a fast world. And, you know, we had to demonstrate to the organization that we're serious about it, but also, this is kind of a different place and requires different thinking and requires different skills. And it's not something to be afraid of.
Okay.
We all have to work together to make it happen. So yeah, Hatch is, it's an awesome environment for different thinking here on the Chick-fil-A campus.
So it's a physical space. I think you should just said 80,000 square feet. I take it's a space where most employees don't actually have offices or spend their time working in, but people come into it. How do you use it? And tell us about that.
Yeah. We have, right now, Chick-fil-A is, it's just, we're growing so much and building so many new restaurants, and capacity is certainly an issue for us, not just in our restaurants, but here on the corporate campus. Mm. You know, the sharing of space, working mobile, trying to get more out of less. And so we're redoing portions of Hatch right now to bring in people from different departments. The training folks are coming over here next week. We're eliminating offices altogether. We're having shared spaces. And we want Hatch to continue to be a magnet, though, of people from all across the organization who just want a place to kind of come and collaborate mm-hmm. or touch down, to think, to dream, to pull up a chair and pull up a whiteboard and start whiteboarding the future mm-hmm. of what their ideas are thinking, to not be able to reserve space, but just show up and start to grab a rolling table. And everything's on wheels over here. So we try to make it all very flexible and open to everybody. Think about the way that the library used to be when you were in college.
You mean the one that actually had books in it?
The one that actually had books in it, yeah. Where you used to go and do work.
Right.
And maybe it was your place to get away. That's that, but in the 21st century and on steroids mm-hmm. is kind of what we're looking for Hatch to be in its next iteration.
Right. Yep. And my library had study rooms and study spaces and
then the big tables where people could gather exactly. around together and work on problems. So it's that's a fairly decent analogy, I okay. think, for what we're trying to create.
So definitely a collaboration area for people, yep. product teams to come in and brainstorm and think through some new ideas. Do you also have prototyping facilities, you know, like to prototype a service or an actual product? And I assume at some point that comes to a kitchen and you develop food.
Well, we have on a corporate campus, we have three separate buildings that all have some kind of innovation work going on in mm-hmm. them. We have an innovation kitchen that is housed in a particular building that works nothing on product development. And because of their needs with equipment and process type of arrangements, they just have to have very defined space that looks, touches, feels like a chefing area. Mm-hmm. And so you have to do that. Hatch doesn't really have a ton of areas like that. We've got some simulation kitchens, but not the kind of place where you can go and actually create products on an ongoing basis. So we have that one space. We have another space where there's a lot of foam core prototyping going on for restaurants. There was a BuzzFeed article that came out recently that showed some of our colleagues building a foam core drive-through. We brought in Nissan Leaf cars to go through it on the inside of this other large warehouse, and we teach, you know, and teach in this area here in this Hatch building. It's more of the socialization, the lunch and learns, the larger format type of approach of facilitated meetings where we're doing understand, imagine, innovation work. Versus prototyping. Mm-hmm. We no longer do prototyping in this facility. We have pushed that all to the other facility to do foam core service model prototyping, that type of thing.
Okay.
So three buildings.
And lots of innovation work going on, which yes. leads me to want to ask you about some of your favorite examples of actual innovation, new products, new yeah. services.
Well, it's funny because it seems like when we started this, that everybody was waiting for the examples to pop up. Mm-hmm. And we used to just tell people, be patient, because we're new at this as an organization. And we have a lot of things that are in front end and not a lot of things that are rolling out.
Sure.
So ultimately, all the launches will begin. So we created a launch wall, and we have plaques that are on the wall for all the different things that have been launching. And that wall is getting filled up pretty fast now. And, you know, 5 years later, well, I guess, you know, since 12-12, and we started in 12-10 as a discipline. So, you know, really 6 years later, we've had all kinds of things that are launching. But one of the things that I'm amazed at is every year there tends to be something else that I go, oh, that's the best one. Mm. And then the next year happens, you go, oh, that's the best one. And the next year hits. So people are really getting in a great rhythm here of moving. So my favorite one right now, mm-hmm. I won't vouch for next year,
sure.
but my favorite one right now is what we just did in Manhattan. With the opening of our first Chick-fil-A restaurant on the street on Avenue of the Americas in Manhattan. I want to say it's like 6th and 37th, you know, in there. But, you know, we had not done business before in an urban location that was heavy, heavy pedestrian, where we had very specific space constraints because we don't own the building. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't build it from the ground up. We have to go in and lease and create something. And so we had all kinds of different type of issues that we had to solve for. We'd never split a kitchen in half and have one on one floor and one on another floor. What does that look like? How do you do that? How does our system work with that? What goes on floor A? What goes on floor B? How do you refrigerate garbage? We'd never had to contemplate that before because you have to work on that when you're in New York. I mean, all the garbage comes out at night and they take it to wherever they take it. But, you know, at night it all comes out, but it's been refrigerated all day. The service model. What's the service model for getting huge amounts of folks through a queue, getting their orders and getting them, you know, right.
Right.
And getting it to. So all of those things we had to solve for and many, many others. So for the last 2 years, we've been building foam core prototypes. We've been working in Hatch. We've been working on service model stuff. We've been working on labor model stuff with Army men, you know, putting our Chick-fil-A operators and franchisees into different scenarios where they're working on. So develop the labor model for this, and we give them a bunch of Army men, and they're moving pieces around. And what has happened as a result in the opening of Manhattan has just been unbelievable. The number of people that we're serving, the systems and processes that we've put into place that are actually working, you know, and I go into the restaurant and no lie, the hair on the back of my head is standing up because I know what it took to get that to happen. I know how long it took to get that to happen. I saw it, you know, at the very, very beginning with the people that were working so hard, diligently on trying to make that happen, and then to actually see customers be able to experience it. For now, I mean, Manhattan is my favorite story. Ask me next year. I'll probably give you another.
There'll be another one, no doubt.
There'll be another one, yeah.
And a couple of key things he said there just to highlight. One was to be patient, right? And I've heard this from other people leading innovation charges in their company too. This rebuilding of the culture to embrace innovation, it takes time, right? And now,
oh, you know,
6 years later, you're seeing some fruit of all those efforts. But it is the snowball running down the hill of the mountain that, you know, it takes a while to get going, and it starts building up some traction. And then all of a sudden, lots of things are happening all at one time.
That's right.
And it's a good reminder for companies that are wanting to change their culture. You got to take, you know, step-by-step actions that are predictable, but be patient for the outcome.
Well, and one thing too, just to bounce off of that, or two things. Number one is
you can yes and that anytime you like.
Yes, I will. Yes and that twice. Yes, and the leader of the organization must embrace an innovation mindset. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work from the ground up. It's got to be embraced also from the top down. Mm-hmm. And so the second yes and is that in that sigmoid curve of innovation, you know, where you start something and it begins to go down and looks like it's going to fail until it begins to catch and then go up. And then, you know, you suddenly get success is you have to have enough guts to stick out what I call the dip. Because when the dip happens, and it will happen, you have to have enough guts to live through it. Now, it very well may be that in that particular dip, you have to recognize when you have to abandon. I get that. But at least for us, part of our culture is being willing to live with the uncomfortableness of something new and work through that. So it's not just the leader of the organization that's being willing to push innovation through the organization, but it's as an organization or as a department or as an individual being willing to go, this is a little messy and muddy right now. This isn't perfect right now. That's okay. You know, there's a beyond this that will happen. And so I think that's part of that patience too, is you have to be willing to survive the dip because it's going to come.
Right.
Yeah.
And just push through.
Push through. Yeah.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing those two yes ands about what it means to be patient through this process. And also, I noticed when you were talking about the Manhattan example, you know, passion comes through in this, right? From you personally, you know, and, right. And when you're in that, you know, the hair standing up on the back of your neck. And having been through so many Chick-fil-A restaurants, there's just a passion that's part of the culture. And one of my examples, and I can't even remember what town and what state we were in, but was just sharing a little bit about what we were doing, you know, with the manager mm-hmm. there, and that we've been at all these Chick-fil-A's, and we're just really curious about the operation. And she started telling us about it a little bit, and she goes, "You want to come back and take a tour of the kitchen?" Oh, sure, you know.
That's great.
We love field trips like this. Right. So, and she took us through the kitchen, and I didn't realize how fresh the chicken actually is, right? That it's breaded there in the restaurant, right?
And that's correct.
We learned all these great new things just about a mm-hmm. restaurant we already love. And so many of our experiences would have that passion element of the employees. Mm. How do you think that has helped make this change of innovation possible? Do you think there's a connection there, some influence?
Oh, I think there's a huge connection there. It's, you know, we can have all the passion of the world here at the support center. But the reality is that, and I would be so remiss to not mention that where the rubber meets the road, where the customer comes into the Chick-fil-A restaurant and the team member is there, where the guest gets out of their car and walks into the Chick-fil-A mm-hmm. restaurant, greeted by the team member, greeted by the operator. I mean, those are the people where the passion is palpable. That's where it happens. That's where the magic is. And anything that we do here is just multiplied by the operator and the local franchisee who is able to execute and dream and work through and serve at a local level. That's what makes us Chick-fil-A. Mm-hmm. That's the secret sauce. It's that operator and that team member working at a local level in a passionate way to serve, looking at all these things, trying to figure out. So how do I get more people through the drive-thru? Trying to figure out, how do I create a queue mm-hmm. line? Trying to figure out, what happens if I take ice cream and lemonade and put it together?
Yeah. Right.
Frozen right. lemonade or frosted lemonade. Frosted lemonade is a product that we released here very recently, and it was born out of our restaurants. Mm-hmm. And somebody brilliant at the restaurant just said, "Hey, we've got these two things. What happens if you put them together?" So if not for the operator and the team member at the local level, everything that we do here would be for naught. It really would be. We can think very highly of what we do here, but the operators are the ones that execute it. And so it's the backbone of what we do.
And it's a good perspective. Unfortunately, one that too many companies don't have is the importance of the front line that deals with the customer day in and day out.
I tell you what, yeah, our guests have very high expectations when they go into our restaurants. And so,
well, if you guys weren't so consistently good, we wouldn't have those expectations, but you have raised the bar too many times.
Well, you know, we all wish we could take credit for operators selecting the right team members, but it's what they do. So, I'm teasing about taking credit for it. The operators really are the
absolutely,
ones that
sure.
We know.
Yeah. And I realize this happens to be my opportunity to make a suggestion, which is spicy nuggets. I don't know if they're coming. That's our two cents. We like the spicy sandwich. We love the nuggets. Why can't we have spicy nuggets? So work on that one for us.
We'll pass that along. Absolutely, we'll pass
that
along.
It seems like a no-brainer. It's like, it could happen. Very good.
And why not, right?
Right, right. So, and as I always like to do towards the end of interviews, I love innovation quotes. I asked you to bring one for us. Could you share that and why you chose it?
Mine has been with me for a long, long time. And it's not from a particularly well-known innovator. But it is from somebody who at least years ago was particularly well known. And I once saw this at an idea conference years and years ago. And I saw it on a t-shirt and I had to buy it. And it's a quote from Milton Berle, who is one of the fathers of, you know, of television, classic comedian. But the quote is, I think, is phenomenal. And to me, it's just something that always has stuck in my mind. And that is, if opportunity doesn't knock, build a door.
Love that.
And there it
That's
is.
Right. Find a way.
Find a way. So I'm in the business of helping people build doors.
Very good. And to wrap up, for listeners that want to find out more about what Chick-fil-A is doing with innovation, how can they do that?
We had a very, very nice article that recently came out, not article, but a portion of Nancy Duarte's new book. It's called Illuminate.
And just to provide context here for listeners, since I happen to know who she is, Nancy does a wonderful job helping individuals and companies figure out how to present ideas. And she kind of started in the actual presentation space, like how does one do PowerPoints really well or keynotes really well? And then building around that the communication elements and the brand elements to be effective in communicating.
That's exactly right. And Nancy's a good friend, and she found out what we were doing here and was kind of enthralled with the way that we were shifting culture. And she did a case study on the innovation piece of the socialization and the storytelling and the training that we were doing. And it's in it's a case study in her new book, Illuminate, which is on bookshelves now everywhere. So if people want to learn a little bit more about the backstory, that's a great
place. Illuminate. And I will provide a link to that in the show notes, of course. And Steve, anything else you want to leave us with?
I just want to encourage people to not only be satisfied with where they are, but to think about where they could be. I mean, there's so much in the world that needs to be solved, so much. And creativity, I believe, is a blessing. And I think that we all need to embrace that part of us that is wired that way. Don't be afraid of it. Chase it when you need to chase it. And you really can help not just your organization grow, but you can really help inspire people. And it can change lives. So I'm very, very fortunate to have a role in an organization where I'm helping people to think differently, to create new solutions, to try new things that can inspire the business to go forward. I love it.
It's a great story. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chad. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening. Do me a favor and tell someone involved in product management and innovation about this podcast. And you'll find all the notes from this discussion with Steve at theeverydayinnovator.com/070. I hope you check it out. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.